Most of us have grown up with a kind of vague understanding of culture. And this is especially true for those of us who were born and raised in urban areas where very often cultures merge into a generic yet limited set of cultural practices. For instance, we are all familiar with umsebenzi or umsebenzi wabadim. These ceremonies are intended as a kind of thanksgiving. It is a process where an animal is slaughtered and cooked and everyone in the neighborhood is invited, and it's generally a good time. This ceremony is said to be in honor of the blessings that the ancestors have bestowed upon someone in the family. But the thing is, in my upbringing, during these ceremonies, no one ever really engages the ancestors in any meaningful way. It is as though the ancestors are like a sideshow to the whole event. This has led me to ask, where exactly does culture and spirituality intercept one another? We've been raised to assume that these two elements are one and the same, but are they really? And the reason that I feel that this distinction between them needs to be properly understood is because a lot of damage is being caused by some of these practices that are said to be culture. These are practices that seem to have lost their context and are now being used as a tool to take advantage of people, most especially women. And because we're made to believe that culture and spirituality are one and the same, questioning these harmful aspects of our culture is made to seem as though one is questioning the ancestors or God himself. I spoke to Gogo Obrimashiki again, in the hopes that he would help me understand where culture and spirituality meet and to which extent the two are the same thing, or if we've been fed half-truths our whole lives. Where I want to start off with this is that this is my understanding. There is no such thing as African spirituality, in the sense that the people who lived on this continent for thousands of years did not call it Africa.
Yes.
One. And is, and as far as I know, in my limited understanding of our languages, there isn't specific language that deals with spirituality as a separate thing. Whereas we can talk about, in all other religions, we can talk about that form of spirituality as a separate entity. But yeah, in African culture or in African beliefs, it's not something that is separate. So most of the time what we then end up talking about is culture or isiNtu, say it, or which is crudely translated as culture.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit more dynamic than that. So is there a line, and if there is a line between African spirituality and culture, where do you draw it?
Okay. Like you, I don't subscribe to the concept or idea of African spirituality. But I do think there are two things we need to do. We do need to recognize that we are dealing with historical phenomena and we're dealing with spirituality. So when you say our ancestors did not call this place Africa, the question is, which ancestors? Your ancestors of 200 years ago, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago. So the point I'm making is that there is a time when our ancestors, the people who lived on this planet, on this continent, on this part of the continent before us, did not call themselves African. That is just a historical fact. The reality is that there comes a time when we are referred to as such, and there comes a time when we refer to ourselves as such. So I might have said the last time that this part of the continent, and therefore the continent as a whole, is the cradle of humankind. So which means all of us on this planet, the 7 billion of us, are from here. And if we accept that at some point, those of us who find themselves here, including our ancestors who find themselves in this part of the world, on this continent, who become known as African, and who come to know themselves as such, they are relatives of those who find themselves elsewhere on the planet, who themselves are African. So the fact that they look a certain way and they find themselves in China, in Latin America, in Europe, does not change the fact that their origins are here. This place we now call Africa. Now, I can argue, for instance, that they were not African in the manner that we call ourselves African as they spread to other parts of the planet. But once you, through a process, historical forces and others, you come to know yourself as African, or you come to accept that you are called African and therefore you are African. There is an important difference between you and those who originate from here, who now find themselves, let's say, in China or Europe or Latin America. All of them, because of their origins, can legitimately be said to be African, even though at the time they left, in all probability, the word African, Africa, did not exist. But The fact that they originate from here does not mean that you, who was smoothing and you are Chinese. You see the difference? So we have a choice. We have the choice to disrobe ourselves of this appellation, African. Or we have another, to say at a certain point in history, we become known as, and we accept and we embrace this robe of being African. And therefore, if we do that, we must give it a particular meaning. Doing that does not solve the problem, because the idea of being African is not uncontested, it is contested. I'll give you an example. These days you hear a lot of people talking about Kemet.
Oh, yes.
And some will tell you Kemet is what we today call Egypt. For some, Kemet is not a place. For some, Kemet is an idea.
Or philosophy.
Or a philosophy. For some, Kemet is a philosophy, an idea, or even a place we must look towards, because that is what being African is. So to be truly African is to look in the direction of Kemet. And to be guided by the spirits of our ancestors from Kemet. But there's an element we forget. Those ancestors understood their origins to be in the south of the continent. So they venerate the south as the place from which their ancestors came. But sometimes we invert the relationship. The South must venerate this place called Kemet, which some people, as I said, regard as Egypt. Whereas it's the other way around. The ancestors of Kemet venerate the South as the place from which humanity came from, and therefore their ancestors came from. So whatever they became starts in the south.
So then in the process of all of this evolution from whether it's 10,000 years ago, over time, right up until this moment, there has been a constant evolution of ideology.
Yes.
Right. And it's when you speak of Kemet and that whole thinking around Egypt and the pharaohs, is that there was an inherent understanding of spirituality.
Yes.
Even though how we sometimes interpret it is that they had a very practical understanding of it, in that they could utilize spiritual principles, whether it be in architecture, in just how they functioned.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So now we come to our age where it's not very clear in that, does spirituality inform culture in the way we do it?
Yeah.
Are our practices based on spirituality? Yes. What we call cultural practices, are they based on spiritual principles?
Well, let's take one step back again to agree with you that what we call African spirituality is universal. But again, we go back to history. There comes a point where these people who are born in the same place that we call the cradle of humankind, find themselves in India, in Brazil, in Europe, in America, and over time have developed their own cultures. And there's something I find interesting about having a sense of place. Mm-hmm. Out of a place will evolve things that are unique to that place.
Is that then what becomes called culture?
Well,
those mechanisms developed as a geographical necessity.
I will say yes, but add this. So you have that sense of place and the things that evolve out of that place. But what is interesting is that when you look at the different places on this continent, there are things that are common, as if we sat at a conference, all of us from these different places, and we passed resolutions about spirituality. But we didn't, you see? So these common things over these thousands of years, why do they remain? They remain because, firstly, as I said, we originate from the same place. But this is not just a geographical location. It's a spiritual location.
Ugogo Vele was saying that these things are embedded in our subconscious.
They are embedded not only in our subconscious, they are embedded in our entire being. Our entire being. And when I talk about our entire being, I'm talking about the fact that we are, because we are not limited to the physical. We are also spiritual beings. And we are beings in other ways that we don't have language for. I don't know if that makes sense. You know? They are embedded in all of that. And there is this, the reason why we then spread throughout the planet, or we find ourselves in different parts of the continent, in different places in the continent, but there are things that remain common about us, is because of that origin, the sameness of our origin. But more importantly, we are blood, we are the same blood. So the woman, the man in Kenya is me. And I am him, and I am her. The woman or man in Nigeria is me, and I am her. You can think of any part of the continent. That is one of the reasons some of the things about spirituality have remained common. Because we are one.
True.
Despite the fact that we find ourselves in different places, out of which differences have emerged. But the fact that we find that which is common remains. It's because we are one, we are from the same seed.
So,
let me add this. It may sound controversial, and I would like you to invite people who can take it forward, agree with it or disagree with it, develop it further. Is it not possible, Nand, that when I say we are one with, I will say, the original spirit. And here I'm talking about the spirit that has always been there, that has no beginning, that is timeless in all directions, We can call it the divine, we can call it the source, we can call it whatever we want to call it. Is it not possible we are one because we are fragments of that spirit? And then, therefore we are that spirit.
And then that then implies that all different beliefs are also fragments.
Well, beliefs are man-made. So, implicitly, and maybe the word implicitly is not that, or innately, we all have this consciousness that we are more than this body. That this body is not our origin.
Yeah.
Our origin is spiritual. And we create sometimes institutions, as we have done. We create rituals. We create sets of beliefs. In other words, we create a complex of constructs that we call beliefs that help us make sense of this relationship with the divine, the spiritual, the ancestral, and the relationship with one another, and therefore with others. But if we limit ourselves to our essence, we forget about our bodies, and we forget about our minds, and we think of ourselves only as spirit, as the totality of who we are, not even the essence, but the totality of who we are, the start and the end of who we are, then is it not possible that as spirit, your spirit, my spirit, it's the same spirit? It's like Elibai and Inqibile, and I cut it into small pieces. Is it not the same bai? It's the pieces of the same bai. And therefore we're fragments of the same spirit. And maybe we're not even fragments. Maybe.
It's like I think what you're getting at is the concept of the hologram.
Yes.
In that if you break it, it's not pieces of a thing, it's complete thing.
Exactly.
Within the small, in its smallest part, it's still a complete element.
Then we have to answer the question. And culture is very important here. Because then, over time, we develop the idea of hierarchy. There's a higher being. There are other beings below the higher being. And we are below the beings who are beneath the higher being. Where does that hierarchy come from? Does it exist? Is there such a hierarchy?
Are you questioning the existence of the hierarchy? Because now you are basically questioning the existence of idols.
Well,
because if we are saying that idols exist, we necessarily have to accept that there is a hierarchy.
Yes.
Because within that, our understanding of idols is that idols knows better than we are. It is in a different, I won't say better, but in a higher realm than we are.
Okay. Think of it in Gesixhosa, Gesizulu, Gesisuthu. Do we have such language of a higher being?
Well, to answer that, in my understanding of how we navigate our relationship with the divine, in the research I've done, God is inaccessible in as far as God is too complex for us to grasp. And this is why sometimes Westerners would believe that Africans don't believe in God, because we have an understanding of God as being an extremely complex, something we can't comprehend. So, and because of that, we need an intermediary.
Yes.
You see, but there's no, I don't know. I don't want to say it's a hierarchy, you know, everything is part of everything. God is everywhere we are, but we don't have the cognitive sense to.
Is God in you?
My current understanding of spirituality says yes.
Are you God?
My current understanding of spirituality says yes.
Okay. Let me put it this way then. I am not questioning. I am asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it is important just to ask the question.
Mm-hmm.
And you can end up in two places, a place where you have an answer or a place where you still don't have the answer,
mm-hmm.
which means you continue asking the question.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you are right. And I think you and I did discuss this, that the spirit, you can only understand it once you understand that you cannot understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Because our minds want shape, they want size, they want color, you know,
mm-hmm.
they want those qualities. In other words, they want to reduce the spirit to something that the mind can manage, but it must be small enough for the mind to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And once you understand that the spirit is beyond that,
mm-hmm.
maybe you should avoid the contradiction of accepting that and not accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moment you say there's a hierarchy, is it not possible that you are pretending you understand now the nature of the spirit? You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So is it not possible that you can believe the divine exists, God, the source, whatever you call it? Is it not possible you can also believe that the ancestors exist and you know that we exist without believing in hierarchy? Is that possible? I ask.
I think it, answer that question is that is based on what I have been taught.
Yes.
In that. There needs to be structure. I need a name.
Yes.
I need a name.
Yeah.
Because without a name, I don't exist.
Yes.
Right. That's a first need.
Yes.
The need for identity.
Yes.
Right. In that I need, and then when comes my name, then comes the other construct.
Yes.
I am a man.
Yes.
You know, and I'm a black man. I am, you know, and I'm all of those things. And I can't say that I can exist out of those things.
Those
because
things, yeah.
The question is, then out of all of that, what am I? Right now in 2020 with,
yes.
with you know, children to send to school, with these things that we need to do. We
yes,
have electricity
yes.
to pay. You know what I mean? I have a mother I need to take care of. I can't not think within that system.
Okay. And I understand fully, which is not the same as saying I agree fully, which is not the same as saying I disagree fully.
Okay.
I understand fully. This need for structure, where does it come from? Now, I'm not asking you now. I'm asking both of us. Take God. I have no doubt that God exists. I doubt that God is what we say God is.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there's God, the God I have no doubt that exists.
Mm.
and there is the God of our creation.
Are you questioning his nature or his character?
No. I'm not questioning anything. I'm saying God exists. Full stop. God exists. Full stop. I am questioning. What I'm not sure about is that the God I believe exists and the God of our creation is the same God. I don't know that that makes sense. It's a take on this question that there are people who say God does not exist. And to the extent that God exists, it's because we have created God. Exists to that extent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying God exists. I have no doubt. I've had experiences in the spiritual realm which have left me with no doubt that God exists. But if you want me to write a paper or whatever to define God, to explain what God is, it will be a very short paper. God exists, full stop, and I'll submit. Everything that follows will be what I think, what I believe. And to that extent, I may be creating the difference between this God of one sentence, the God who exists, and the God of my creation. Now remember, before there was language, did God exist? Yes, God did exist. Can you just imagine what it was like to have a relationship with God before there was language? Can you just imagine how beautiful that experience must have been? Because one of the things language does, and it is a function of the mind, language wants to reduce things, including God, to that which the mind can manage. Can you imagine just how boundless the idea and experience of God must have been before language? Some might will argue and say there was never a time when there was no language. I don't know about that. You know. So the important relationship between what you are saying and culture is that that's precisely the point. Structure. Identity. A way of doing things. A common set of beliefs. There might be differences, disagreements, but they're within a broad set of commonly held beliefs, customs, rituals, and so on. Relationships between men and women, men and men, what is a man, what is a woman, all of which will form this culture.
From what you're saying then, is that we shouldn't place that much importance on culture.
Well,
because culture is something that is transient, right? It's something that is evolving with every generation, with every family.
Yeah.
But and it's easier to understand this as Black people. But when you look at other cultures who have done a greater job in maintaining a more uniformed culture, one that almost doesn't evolve, has stayed the same in its core. We almost, what can I say? We almost envy them.
Yeah.
Right. Is the evolution of our culture to our detriment?
Well, let's go back to our last discussion about harmony. Culture exists amongst other things so that there is harmony in society, in the nation, the community. There must be things which bind us, or to which we are bound to maintain harmony. Without them, there's disharmony.
Mm-hmm.
There is chaos. There is disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So, among other reasons, culture exists to prevent the disorder, the disharmony, the discord, to maintain harmony.
But now, the question is, in our age,
yes,
the question then becomes, whose definition of harmony?
Are you we, see, that's the thing.
Are we
all the things to? I am telling you, I am not telling you what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't told you what I believe. In all probability, I will never tell you what I believe. I will tell you what I think. Because these are questions I think about all the time.
Yeah.
And the fact that I do not have clear answers does not stop me and should not stop anyone from asking these questions,
yeah,
because maybe one day we will have answers.
Because the basis of my question is this. Here's a scenario, because in me trying to understand the intersection between spirituality and culture,
yeah,
we need to have a ceremony.
Yes.
Right? There's a goat.
Yes.
That needs to be slaughtered.
Slaughtered, yes.
Okay. Because within that slaughtering, there's an inherent spiritual purpose to it.
Yes.
Right. Then what comes next is, who's going to slaughter it?
Yes.
Right. What we've been taught is that question is spiritual.
Yes.
The question of who's going to do it,
yes,
is spiritual. Whereas in practicality, anyone can do it.
Yes.
But we're going to say, no, it needs to be done by Malume. It needs to be,
yes,
done by the father.
Yes.
It needs to be done by the elder brother.
Yes.
And so what I want to understand, are those questions spiritual? Is it a construct that, you know, we need? Is it a construct that we have to uphold? You know? Because as time goes, fewer and fewer families have fathers in them.
Yes.
So increasingly the question is going to be, who's going to slaughter this goat?
Yes.
Because the next thing that's going to happen is that there's a daughter who's strong in the family.
Okay.
Very much capable of doing that.
Yes.
And then she's going to do it first.
Yes.
And she's going to do it properly. Down the line in that family, women can do it.
Yes.
I don't even know what my question is, but it's just me thinking.
Let me tell you what your question is. It's a very important question. Should we question culture?
Mm-hmm.
But you're asking a more pointed question. Should we question cultural practices? Because amongst other things, a culture consists of practices, it consists of values, beliefs. So, when you ask, who should slaughter that goat? I believe that our ancestors, and here I'm not talking about ancestors in the historical sense, the human beings who are here before us. I'm talking about our ancestors as spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they are much more pragmatic than we are. I also believe that there are a lot of beliefs that are not of their own that we impose on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, by extension, I believe, therefore, the answer to the question, who should slaughter that goat? Is a function of our accumulated knowledge of who should. In other words, what has been passed down from one generation to another is that it should be slaughtered by this man or Malume or whatever.
Mm.
Whatever has been passed on to us. Does this mean For instance, that he can never be slaughtered by a woman or a group of women. I think pragmatically our ancestors would say there are circumstances under which they can conceive of a woman or a group of women slaughtering a goat as an offering to them, and they will not reject it. I may not today be able to explain what those circumstances may be, but I think it is reasonable to surmise that pragmatically there are circumstances under which our ancestors would accept an offering that is being made to them through slaughtering that is done by a woman or a group of women.
Okay. So now when you talk about offerings, then you bring me to my next section to this, and that is materialism.
Yes.
In that, the narrative around our beliefs, especially in Southern Africa, and spiritual beliefs, is that our ancestors are very materialistic. They want things. The challenge with that, or where this becomes a problem, is that you are my father. You are my father, but because of history and whatever, you were alcoholic. You weren't really around, you know. You didn't provide much. You were just a ghost in the house who came and left. And then you passed on. You left us in poverty. And now you're coming back wanting things. You want the cow, you want this, you want this, you want that. How real are those things where we're constantly, I won't say made to believe, but where is it that, you know, what use do they have of things?
Yeah.
You know, those slaughterings. You know, Umkulu wants a tombstone, Koko wants this in the house, she wants that vase there. Like, what use do they have of, or is these things that we've been made to believe, or are things that are practical in the spiritual realm?
Well, let me say something. I will say it in passing.
Okay.
And as you can hear, Inkuku namhlanje are quite eager to participate. I hope it is in agreement. They are not saying we are Buddha or Gogo namhlanje. So Gogo say to me, for us, the possibilities are infinite. For you and your minds, they are limited. For me, that's very important. Because it means that we must be open to the possibility. For me, it's not even a possibility. I do believe there are things we believe which are of our own that we impose on our ancestors as spirit. I believe that what is important is to build a relationship with our ancestors. And that relationship, amongst other things, will consist of conversations. All the questions we are raising today and more must form the basis of conversations we must have with our ancestors, because I believe that there are things that come from this world, the material world, that we have imposed on our ancestors, and we pretend they are from them. Okay? And in some cases, we are correct. They are from them to the extent that they have accepted as correct, as acceptable, that which we have imposed on them. But I'm also convinced that there are things that we have tried to impose on them which they have rejected. Okay, so that's one. Two, I believe that we must be guided. We must always seek guidance. Well, not always, always. If you have already been guided about something, you can't keep on going back to them to say, hey, how do I do this? When they've already guided you about how you should do it. But what I'm saying is that where we are not certain, we should seek guidance. And I do believe that there are things that have become part of our culture, part of our customs, amasiko nezithethe zethu. Things we do because we were guided by them. Izinyanya said to us, we want you to do this way. It may be izinyanya of your family. It may be izinyanya of the nation who say, in this family, we want things to be done this way or that way. And maybe through visions and other ways in which they communicate with us, they have guided us about how this lamasiko nezithethe should proceed. So I believe in those two things, or maybe three, that there are things which come from us, which we impose on them, which are acceptable to them. And there are things we impose on them which they reject. And once we become aware of those things, we stop doing them. But there are things which come from them, they guide us that xa kwenza umsebenzi onje sifuna uwenze kanje kanje kanje. Coming from them. But I also believe that there is some kind of secularity in the relationship between us and the ancestors. Remember that we have this interesting relationship. They don't have bodies, we do. And there's work they need to do through our bodies. By the way, also through our minds, not just our bodies. And we don't have what they have, that the level of spiritual consciousness, which they don't have. And we need that. Which means in this relationship, we must work towards a win-win situation. But the win-win situation results in a situation where we all win. They win, we win, and we as human beings are better for it. I then believe that it is important that we submit to the guidance of the ancestors. But I also believe we have a responsibility to guide them too. So it's not a one-way street. We must be guided, and they too must be guided by us. What? But that presupposes firstly the existence of a relationship, a sound relationship between us and them, during which relationship, amongst other things, we engage in these conversations. So when you ask questions about culture and you say it's 2020, there are things when you were here you used to do. We are not sure that they are still relevant. We must have a conversation with them about that, during which they will guide us, and we too, even by initiating that conversation, we're engaging the process of guiding them.
One of the most contentious aspects of culture as it stands today revolves around weddings and marriages.
Yes.
Things are very contentious in that. In one aspect, there's the issue of ilobolo.
Yes.
Right? Where, you know, you have to get married customarily, otherwise you're not fully African if you don't keep a malobolo. And, you know, and then there's the aspect of the wedding, traditional wedding.
Yes.
Inyongo and all of those things. Why are ancestors so invested in things like that?
Are they?
well, we believe, we are told, they are very, very invested in Amalobolo and Inyongo.
Let me say this, and I don't mean to be insulting.
I understand.
A lot of learning that happens in society is thoughtless.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things that we believe are thoughtless. In other words, they are not a function of thought.
Mm-hmm.
There is an element of being mechanistic and robotic in some of the things we believe and some of the things we do. Because a lot of learning that happens in society, as I said, is thoughtless. Even about things which are not spiritual, things that are political, for instance. How we believe society should be organized, how an economy should be organized. A lot of what we believe about those things are thoughtless. They're not a function of thought. So, I do believe that our ancestors want us to be conscious. And being conscious means we don't do things just because they did them. We don't do them the way they did just because that's how they did them. I believe they want us to be conscious. I do believe that they have an appreciation for where we are, that we don't live in the period during which they lived. I do believe that. But I also do believe that there should be things we should cherish on our own. And we, as I say, engaging in these conversations with them, if that which we believe is good for us in society, is something we should continue doing, and it is acceptable to them, and we must check that it is acceptable to them, we can continue doing it. That which was done before, which no longer serves us or no longer serves any purpose whatsoever, again, we engage in conversation with them to see whether we can be guided into seeing something we did not. Because you can come to the conclusion that, let's say, Ilobola does not serve us anymore, only to find that we have blind spots that we have developed. Sometimes through things like colonialism, for instance. And how black bodies live in a white world. And black bodies think when they make the choice not to respect Ilobola anymore, they think they did so because they have a sense of agency. When actually the fact that when you are born black, your black body is born in a white world where the standard is whiteness, means your agency is either limited or non-existent. And that may be one of the things which influences what you think is your progressive thinking about abandoning things like global. And then what I would advise is that when you reach that moment, you go back to them. Because maybe they will show you something you did not think of. And you'll end up in one of two places, at a place where you accept that because of the reasons they've given, you need to continue the label, or you need to stop it, or you can land at a third place where they say you can continue with the label with the following changes. But we are not robots. When we engage in these conversations, we engage in these conversations with our ancestors having certain ideas about what should be kept, what should be discarded, and what should change.
Mm-hmm.
And we engage with them in on that basis. But, you know, I listen to these debates on talk radio, and I marvel at how what I would call white culture, for want of a better term. Have you noticed that classes bangamakoboga when you become educated, middle class, sophisticated, so we think. The fact that we mimic whiteness is something we don't question. Our mimicking of whiteness makes us question that which comes from our culture or from our ancestors, you know. So it seems to me that when we ask these questions, we must also ask ourselves, where do these questions come from? Many of these questions come from the fact that we are black bodies that live in a white world. And whiteness is the standard. And therefore, the worldview of whiteness is the standard. The culture of whiteness is the standard. The grammar of whiteness is the standard. Then the questions are posed through the grammar of whiteness. So that's another element you must introduce to these debates about what should change or not about culture. Mm-hmm. Where do the questions come from? Do they come from who we are, or do they come from who we are not? Do they come from our desperation to mimic whiteness? Do they come from the fact that actually, to some extent, some of us are no longer purveyors of whiteness, but are white, despite what the color of the skin tells us?
In the context of marriage, I want to say that some of the questions come from young black women,
yes,
who believe that they are being traded as assets.
Yes.
Then they ask the question, what is the purpose of this? Because,
well, is that the primary reason? Or the perversions that have emerged around issues like ilobola, and some of the pathologies that have attached themselves to some of our cultural practices, like money as a perversion. It's quite possible that we raise them not as the underlying question. We raise them to mask our underlying discomfort with who we are. That's not the same as saying women must not raise those questions. I have serious problems with how lobola is practiced today. Serious problems. How it has become commodified, and by extension, how women have become commodified. In many ways, the manner in which we practice ilobola today is a deviation from what our ancestors believed, and therefore how they practiced it. To that extent, those perversions must go. They must go. And to say they must go, when a woman says they must go, the woman is not showing disrespect to the ancestors. So, some of the things we impose our ancestors are these perversions. And it is easy to believe them, because if you yourself have become a purveyor of these perversions, you die and you become an ancestor. They are your perversions too, as an ancestor, you see that? And therefore, us the living can legitimately say, utatomkhulu Ncande uVusumuzi wayethe apha ekhaya kulotyolwa nge-Mercedes Benz. You see that?
A black one.
A black one. You know? Apha ekhaya, ukuba umntana walapha ekhaya une-MBA. cannot be less than 100,000 rand, Ilobo. Those are perversions. I would even say these are capitalist perversions. You know, which have nothing to do with our culture. But remember, and to contradict myself immediately, cultures have perversions. Perversions do become part of our culture. And that is why I said we need to be conscious. Our ancestors want us to be conscious. They don't want us to relate with them as robots who are mechanical in how we perform our customs and our rituals, you know. So I accept that there is an extent to which it is not possible to explain certain rituals. For instance, I do believe as a Sangoma that there are times when I must submit to the will of the ancestors without seeking to understand. Partly because there are things about them I will never understand. And when they call upon me to do something which I do not understand, there are times when I must just do it without seeking to understand. But there is a nuance and a pragmatism about our ancestors. And that nuance and pragmatism means they do expect us to be conscious, not robotic in our relationship with them. So the relationship is complex in that way. Yeah.
In that complexity, which I feel like comes from, there's so many interpretations of certain things. Do you think we would ever get to a point where African spirituality has a singular dogma? Not, I don't want to say dogma, a singular essence. You know, like how different religions have one core.
Yes.
You know, there's a well-defined, this is this, this is not that, this is this. And in other beliefs, it centers around people, be it your Jesus, your Muhammad, your saints, your, you know, there's your Buddha, your teacher, your great teachers. Do you think we would ever get to the point where African spirituality has that solid structure? Because sometimes it feels like there are so many different interpretations that there's almost nothing there.
Well, there's something I love about indigenous knowledge. Not just African indigenous knowledge in general, wherever you are in the world. The idea that there is chaos in order and order in chaos, it, to me, is a very beautiful idea. I'll give an example, another example. So, as I believe, it is the community, the communal, that must be central, not the individual. But look at this. Our ancestors teach us you can be an individual within a community. And a collective collection of positive individual qualities strengthen the collective. So they don't have a dogmatic or mechanical understanding of the relationship between the individual and the communal. So that's not them being dogmatic or mechanical when they say the collective must be central. So they believe that the collective is central. So what you do as an individual should not harm the collective. And COVID-19 is teaching us that. the destructive belief in extreme individualism, which says I have the right not to wear a mask. In other words, I have the right to infect you. Whereas someone who believes that the communal is central does not believe they have the right to infect you because they have the right not to wear a mask. You see? So in Xhosa we have saying such as akukho nkwali iphandela enye. So being part of a collective does not mean you become this lump of clay. Individual effort and agency within the collective is important. Akukho nkwali iphandela enye. We have another saying, AmaZulu will say things like asicabangi ngokufana njengamanzi omfula who flow in the same direction. Recognizing that sameness within the collective does not cancel out difference. So they have quite a sophisticated and nuanced understanding of the relationship between the individual and the communal, the individual and the collective. And that's what we're being called upon to do. To be sophisticated ourselves, to be nuanced, to be pragmatic in our conception of the relationship between the collective and the individual. What the collective does must not harm the individual. What individuals do must not harm the collective. Personally, I believe in one thing, harmony. Harmony. That which disturbs harmony, we must discard.
So Ubuntu is like a primordial spiritual belief.
Ubuntu, and forgive me if I'm repeating myself. I might have said this the last time. That there is a belief that I believe is false. The idea that Ubuntu is a quality that resides only in those we have come to know as African. Ubuntu is a human quality. You can find to those who are Chinese, in those who are Chinese, who are European, who are American, who are Latin American. In other words, it's a quality that resides in those who are human. Certain parts of the world have lost this human quality. And that is why they can visit upon us things like capitalism, colonialism, neo-apartheid in this country. But it does not mean they never had it. They did. It has become perverted, it has become distorted, in many cases destroyed. And that is why, for instance, you have things like vaccine nationalism. That you have the resources to produce vaccine, you don't see it as something that should benefit all of humanity. You see it as something that should benefit only those who fall within your circle of compassion, only those who are like you, or those who believe in what you believe. And those who fall outside that, therefore fall outside your circle of compassion. So Ubuntu, to me, is not just a concept. Ubuntu is a call to humanity to return to who they truly are, to their essence. And Ubuntu is governed by our essence. And our essence is the spiritual. You can't disconnect Ubuntu from spirituality. In the same way, the things we do in our cultural spaces must be guided by that essence, the spiritual. The fact that we are spiritual, amongst other reasons, because the divine resides both inside and outside us, and therefore, to some extent, the divine is us. It resides in our ancestors and outside them, which means therefore they reside in us too, and we reside in them. And anything about our culture that disturbs that harmony, the harmony between me and the divine and the ancestral, must be removed from our culture.
Towards. This topic, just like most of the topics covered in this podcast, is extremely, extremely complicated. You could write a whole book about the intersection of culture and spirituality and what it means to us as a people. And if I had spoken to someone else, I would have probably gotten different sets of answers. What I really appreciate about my engagement with Ugogo Aubrey is the continued emphasis on how formulating a question is actually fundamentally important to getting the right answer, and that sometimes a question is a whole world unto itself. Okay, so I have a confession. This was supposed to be the very last episode of the Journey Gwantu podcast. I never intended for this project to be a never-ending process, and I believe that I was led towards this project by my guides as a way of facilitating my learning. What it has done is that it has served to reaffirm not just my connection to my guides, but to the reality that spirituality is truly, truly diverse, and that African spirituality is not about hardship and desperation and generational trauma and jealous neighbors. That being said, I also believe that it is important, in fact, crucial, to evolve as a person and as a people. Because of this, I've always known that this podcast represents a certain period in my life, and it is a period that I would eventually move on from as my journey evolves. But now, the conversation that I had with Ugogo Aubrey has shifted something deep inside me. And that something has been bothering me for the past 2 weeks since I recorded this episode. It is to do with our questioning of ourselves and our culture, in that sometimes our questioning of our culture tends to be like a process of elimination. With each question, something is taken away. What has been bothering me is this. When we have questioned away all the problematic aspects of our culture, what do we have left? Who exactly are we? Outside of our consumerist lifestyles, outside of our historical trauma, outside of our engineered poverty, and outside of our dysfunction between black men and black women, who are we really? What do we offer the world? As a people, what is our contribution to the collective sense of humanity? What is it that we are going to leave behind for our descendants? What will be our legacy, our gift to those who will come after us? I honestly don't know. And because of this, I have come to realize that this cannot be the end. Not until we have begun answering some of these questions. This is, though, the last episode for the year, but this is not the last episode forever. I guess this is the end of the first chapter. How the next chapter will unfold, I'm really not sure, but I'm really, really looking forward to it. My name is Vosum Zinland. Thank you so much for joining me on yet another episode of The Journey Gwantu. I wish you light, I wish you courage, and I wish you all the best on your journey. Magwande.